This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Well, I don't know if you realize it, but this portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. Well, we are waiting on the manager of the New York Yankees, Aaron Boone, who had a busy day yesterday, and he joins us now, right now on the show. Aaron, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing all right. You know, I was thinking about, well, what do we ask Aaron today that he wasn't asked yesterday? So this is the first thing I came up with. This is a really tough job. I mean, the fan base is outraged when it doesn't win a championship, and that goes back to what George Steinbrenner said, championship or bust. So you've been in the playoffs 4 years in a row, and the criticism is constant. Was there ever a point where you sat back and go, what do I need this for? I could go to a quiet market, manage there, not have the aggravation, not have the criticism. Did that ever enter your mind, Aaron?
That was going to have to be down the road. So, you know, I think I understand there was speculation out there. But really, you know, regardless of re-upping or not, I was under contract for the next few weeks. So I wasn't going to go down that road of trying to find out or, you know, listen to anything other than the rumors. So I know this is where I want to be. I have a connection here. I have, I've been through a lot with, you know, guys within the organization, on my staff, in the room with players. You know, there's some of the players that have been here all 4 years with me, and there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that goes on, and I desperately want to get to the top of the mountain with a lot of people and sharing that.
But the stress of this job, I would think, you've played in other places, and you've played here as well. You know the difference. I mean, Brian Cashman came out and said yesterday, if you had played out your contract to the end of the World Series, you'd be the number one free agent manager that teams would want you. So do you ever consider the stress to be too much and not worth it?
No, I mean, there's days where, you know, this was a tough year, you know, just because of the up and down nature of it and the frustration of that, of, you know, trying to find that consistency and not being able to do it. You know, it makes for some frustrating days, even some stressful days. But, you know, you'll hear us a lot, and you've probably certainly heard me say this, you know what you're signing up for. You know, you're coming into, you know, quote unquote, a pressure cooker. You're coming into one of the greatest franchises in the world, and to get a chance to be one of the guys that helps lead that is something that you cherish, and you cherish and treasure being in the arena where you know it's going to be incredibly difficult, and there's going to be the inevitable slings and arrows that come your way. You know that going in, but to have a chance to compete with this organization, with a number of the people and players that, you know, I have a strong relationship with, we're trying to win a championship, and we haven't done that yet. And, we're desperately trying to get to that top of the mountain, and I want to go through it with these guys.
You know, one team's success is another team's failure, right? So there's a lot of teams that would love to have the 4 years that you've had with the Yankees, but that pressure comes with expectation. So with 4 years without a championship, do you think it's wrong for Yankee fans to look at those 4 years as a failure?
I mean, look, I'm not going to tell people how they should look at things or feel. We haven't achieved our ultimate goal. I won't sit here and say we've been a failure by any means or that I have. But that said, we've gone into the season, I think, with – and not being unrealistic, that saying our goal is to win a championship. We have that type of team. We've been a little bit better in some years than others, but that's been our goal going into each and every year, and I think rightfully our goal. And, what people make of it and think of it, again, that's part of it, you know. And as important as all this is to me, and it's my livelihood now, and it's, you know, how you make a living, and, you know, I also, there's a separator, and it's not everything, you know. You try not to lose yourself, you know, when you're in this job where, you know, you're in the spotlight a lot.
Now, I'm going to phrase this question. I know I'll get attacked for it because a lot of people that listen say that I kiss your fanny too much and I give you too much credit.
What?
Yeah, and I would say ask Aaron if he thinks that, right?
Well, I was going to say, Aaron, how do you view
it? How do you curious. View it? Seriously.
Yeah, do you think Michael, because really the audience thinks that he's your best friend, he never stops kissing your butt. How do you view the way Michael treats you on this show?
I'm not going to say the opposite of that, but not close to that.
Right. That's what I feel. I mean, I'm honest.
It's also sometimes, you know, we say they, and sometimes it's the loudest voices out there that get credit for being they. There's a lot of people out there that aren't, you know, whatever, on social media or whatever their platform are, that, you find a lot of support out there as well.
Well, the point I was going to make, you know, everybody looks at this season as, you know, a failed opportunity. And to be honest, at the beginning of the year, most everybody in the world picked you guys to represent the American League in the World Series. Something happened along the way. But when you look at the end game, your run differential, the amount of runs that you guys didn't score and the run differential you had, you actually won six more games than you should have. So do you think this team overachieved because obviously some players didn't put up the numbers that were expected of them? I know that's a weird, convoluted way, but with the run differential, did you do better than you should have?
Yeah, here's how I look at it is, you know, I think offensively as a whole, you know, we didn't live up to, you know, our standard, our expectation, certainly what I feel we're capable of. You know, we had obviously a handful of guys that did have tremendous years, but we also struggled, and that made, you know, that made it a little more challenging because that's always been, you know, in the previous three seasons, something that we could certainly hang our hat on. So it forced us to, you know, into a lot of really close games, you know, forced us to probably, you know, use some relievers and pitchers a little more frequently than maybe you'd like, but it also allowed us to really develop. And we saw some other pitchers and some other relievers really blossom and become part of, you know, a trust tree that you could count on them to get big outs. And we had to lean on guys for big outs because we were in so many close games. So, you know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, we just weren't quite the same offense that we've been, you know, every year since I've been here.
Aaron, is there any one particular criticism that you or the team gets on a regular basis that you wish you could sort of have a conversation with the fan base about? One particular frustration you have that you'd like to express to the fan base?
Oh, man, it's a great question. I don't know if I have the answer for you, you know, right now. If we sat down and we're talking, I'd probably come up with some things where, you know, it just happened in a conversation. And that said, like, I really do, as best I can, tune out a lot of the noise and a lot of the criticisms and the times when you're getting patted on the back. You know, I try and, you know, especially during the season, stay away from that stuff as much as I can. Not just putting my head in the sand, not being aware of things that are going on. You know, I try and make myself aware, but, you know, you try and, you know, stay away from the noise and because you don't want that to impact, you know, your ability to do your job. I don't know. Maybe it'll come to me as this interview unfolds.
Well, I have one that a lot of people say that. Why don't you kick the players' ass publicly? Why don't you criticize your players when they don't run to first base? They say this. Aaron Boone is too soft on his players. What's your reply to that?
Mm-hmm. Look, I think one of the things, you know, that I look at and managing here, managing in New York, managing for the Yankees is, you know, playing for the Yankees. You know, this place holds you accountable more so than any other place in the major league. So I do feel like one of the things that I try and create is a really good environment, a really good work environment, where I do try to shield the players. As for not coming down on players, that's not necessarily true, because I don't get after a guy in public or mm-hmm. in front of the camera. It doesn't mean that I'm not having conversations or difficult conversations or firm conversations behind the scenes. You know, that being said, it is something that I look at and, think, do I tweak things moving forward as far as, how we hold guys accountable and, how in that room we all kind of hold each other to account. And that is something that I am looking at.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Does the organization want you to treat the players a little bit more like with kid gloves than, say, your predecessor did?
No, and I've even heard that that's kind of a misnomer, that that Joe was this drill sergeant that was on the players a lot, and I don't think that was the case at all. But no, they don't ask me to treat the players, They don't ask me to treat them anyway. It's, they hired me to do this job, and I try and do it and lead it and create that environment, create that accountability as best I can. I think, one of the things where I look back this year and I look at one of the most important things in my job, in a manager's job, I believe, is how do you create an environment where you're getting the most out of your coaches, where you're empowering coaches to be at their best, to impact players who they come in contact with each and every day. How can they do that? And then the same with the players. Like, how do I tap into individuals to get the most out of them? And everyone's a little bit different. Obviously, you've got to have a set of standards, but then tapping into individuals. And that's one area where I feel like I've always felt like that should be a strength of mine, and I'm able to do that. And I felt like this year, maybe I didn't get the most out of, some guys that, and that's an area of frustration, an area of reflection, and an area where I, frankly want to get better.
You said something yesterday during the Zoom press conference that it wasn't followed up by the writer who asked, and you said, we have the players here to get it done. Now, I would respectfully disagree. I think you need some different players and different. You think that if you came back and ran it back, that the results would be different next year, Aaron?
No, I mean, no, I want to run it forward. We have to get better. We have to make some tweaks. We have to make some alterations to our team and whatnot. I was saying, I think we have a handful, a strong making of key ingredients, key core people, key intangible makeup people that will get us to where we want to go. I absolutely think we got to make, you know, whatever moves we end up making this winter, you know, we have to get those right, you know, especially in what I think is a league that is getting stronger and stronger and more competitive, and a division that's getting stronger and stronger and more competitive.
You know, when you analyze this season, Aaron, it really depends on what part of the season you're talking about. Because there were some times it looked like you were awful, and then sometimes you were the best team in baseball. So where do you think the inconsistency came from?
You know what? I don't that's the maddening thing about it. And again, I would say, you know, from my perspective, just really, you know, ultimately my job is getting the most out of guys, getting guys to perform, you know, at or near their best. And, you know, we had enough guys that didn't do that. And that's where you got to look at how we're tapping in or where there needs to be changes made. And, because that was an area of frustration and made for a very difficult season. The highs and lows of it, you know, they're inevitable in our game where, you know, the best teams win 95, 100 games. So you're losing a lot of games. So there's going to be some inevitable ups and downs, but, you know, the level of ours was certainly a point of frustration.
Obviously, there's a lot of personnel decisions that have to be made with this team and decisions Brian Cashman and yourself and Hal will have to make. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to picture this team at some point making a decision to go on without Aaron Judge because of how not only how good a ball player he is, but how culturally important he is. What can you say about the role Judge has sort of grown into in the locker room on this team?
I've seen him grow each and every year as far as just his presence, his leadership. You know, obviously he had a great year for us today he had a great season and to see him be able to go out there and stay predominantly healthy and just as productive as he was. And I think he's growing, continues to grow. And I've seen him make strides each and every year about how he does lead, how he does, hold other players accountable and how he does communicate, how he does an outstanding job of kind of leading by example and you know, the importance of being able to post as much as possible and what he does to prepare to be able to do that. And just, you know, he's a gamer. Like, this guy loves to play, expects a lot of everyone around him, and he continues to kind of grow in that leadership role, and it's been fun to watch that.
All right, this is deep in the weeds baseball question. This is a team that's built to hit home runs and launch angle and all that deal. How do you explain, Aaron, that this team hit so many ground balls this year, which led to a lot of double plays as well?
Yeah, you know what? That's one of the things. There you go, that criticism that comes that, you know, every year, you know, we strike out too much when really there's been years I think we're, you know, at the top as far as least strikeouts and stuff. We didn't hit the ball out of the ballpark as much as we normally do or as much as we would expect to. Mm-hmm. Putting the ball on the ground is ultimately what hurt us offensively. And while, you know, especially because the narratives get going out there, you know, you almost romanticize with just put the ball in play and make contact. Contact is a skill that is so valued and really treasured, and you try and grab guys that are great contact guys. But when you try to force contact in certain situations, I think that sometimes that narrative kind of bleeds in and lends itself to when you start expanding the strike zone a little bit, that's when you touch the ball, and that's when you touch the ball weakly, and that's when you put the ball on the ground, and when you're, you know, not a fast team or whatever, that's what leads to the double play ball, which I think putting the ball on the ground and the double play ball is the biggest thing that hurt our offense this year.
Are you concerned, Aaron, with with Gerrit Cole. Now, I said on the postgame show on Yes After the Wild Card loss that I'd go to war with that dude any day. But when you look mm-hmm. at when MLB started the crackdown on the sticky stuff, the numbers are – and he had great games after that, so I'm not –
Yep.
I'm not ignorant of that, but the numbers after that date in June are exponentially mm-hmm. higher than they were before. Is that something yep. that you guys are going to have to work with? Is that an issue in your mind?
I think he's going to be great. I think he's going to be great next year. I think he's going to be great for the years to come. And you know, let's take a step back and we look at that, and I know the ERA was higher from that point on. And like you said, there were a handful of, like, amazing games sprinkled in there, but let's just look at the raw stuff and breaking down what he's doing. I think everything suggests that he's going to continue to be great at this moving forward. I think there were some games that, you know, sometimes a team has a really good game plan, is hunting a certain thing, and especially selling out against a guy like Gerrit Cole, where you tend to sell out for some slug in certain situation or a certain pitch, even if it's going to make you look bad, because, you know, it's going to be hard to string things together against them. So, you know, I think coupled with, you know, missing some time with COVID, you know, missing a start and a half or two with COVID, and then the hamstring that kind of, and even though I think he was sound and good and the stuff was all there, I think you add it all up and coming off of last season, you know, a couple of rocky outings, you know, made for it being a little more of a challenge the last few months. But in my eyes, everything lends itself to, I think he's going to be great next year. I think the way he prepares, the way he works, who he is, will get him where he needs to be as we get ready for spring training and on into the season next year.
What about Chapman?
What do you mean?
Well, he was, you know, you had problems with him down the stretch. I mean, Peralta was almost his caddy at times where he was up and had to finish games
right.
for him. He seemed as if he lost some confidence and some control. So are you confident yeah. that he can be that closer that you
I
thought
am.
He would be?
I am. And I think if you look at his body of work over the final couple of months, it was very strong. Not quite as strong as his first 2 months. His first 2 months is the best Chappie I've ever seen, and that's saying a lot considering the career that he's had. It was just so efficient and so, you know, so good. And then he hit that rough stretch, and within that rough patch of where he was struggling for, you know, a month or two, there was a couple weeks in there where it was really rough, where I think his confidence definitely took a hit. And that's not something you always think about with Chappie, but I do feel like he was able to kind of ride himself, work himself back into. I don't think he got all the way back to where he was at the beginning of the season, but I think he was in a pretty good spot late in the year and where he was stringing together solid outings.
Do you believe that DJ LeMahieu's drop from the first 2 years were because of this core injury, or was the core injury something that happened at the end and now we're looking at it, maybe it was bothering him the whole year? What's your take on that?
Well, I think it certainly contributed to the, you know, towards the end of the season.
Right.
You know, and I think it's probably fair to speculate that, you know, it impacted his season on a larger scale at different points. I'm sure that injury was something that probably came on over time, you know, as it wasn't where maybe early on it wasn't even that big a deal to him or even noticed it, but probably had some kind of subtle impact on it. When that started, I don't know for certain. But I think it's fair to say it probably impacted him at least a little bit for a good chunk of the season.
All right, now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It did seem like Stanton's turnaround came around the same time he started playing the field. Was that just coincidence? Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't, would you be more open to having him play the outfield more next year?
I guess technically impossible to know if it was coincidence. I do think there was some correlation there. I think he took to it really well. I think his body responded to it really well, probably even better than he expected. And I do think it is something that helped him. But I'm not prepared to say that, you know, he wouldn't have taken off if he just continued to DH. Because really, as much as he was injured in 19 and 20, for the chunks that he was playing, he was incredibly impactful. And I feel like has just evolved so much in his craft and who he is and how he goes about things and the leader he's actually really developed into as well. But yes, I do hope to play him much more as we head into spring training. And I think him being able to play the outfield, whether it's once a week, twice a week, three, whatever it is, I think not only is something that benefits him and helps in a way keep him even more engaged, but also it's a benefit, like, you know, I can, you know, give Judge a DH day or give somebody else a DH day. So I think those things are all really valuable. And when he was able to go to the outfield, I think it benefited more than even just Giancarlo.
Aaron Boone, the Yankee manager, is our guest on the Michael Kay Show. Aaron, is it unrealistic to expect in 2021, the way players are built, that they're going to run hard to first base all the time? I mean, you were teammates with Derek Jeter. I watched every game he played, every ground ball he ran hard to first base. And I'm sorry, I'm not just saying your team. Rafael Devers doesn't run hard to first base. As a manager, can Bogart. You insist that Bogart doesn't? Yeah. Is it impossible for a team, a manager, to say, if you don't run hard to first base, you're out?
Yeah. This is a tough one for me because I played with my hair on fire and I was that guy that ran everything out as fast as I could my entire career, and I don't see the issue with it. I also think even in that case, it's a bad indicator of what I view as a guy that is tough and plays hard and plays, you know. So it depends what different players are dealing with at the time. My big thing is I don't want guys to feel like they have to, on a ground ball to second base where the guy comes up with it and the ball's in the air, like, you got to just be spraying through. I did it, but I don't think that's necessary for everyone. I do think we need to be better at, consistently making sure our effort on routine things are better. And that's something that, you know, we'll address as a group.
In this day and age, though, can a manager say your backside's on the bench, though? I mean, is it that world that you can do that? You did that with Gleyber.
Right. And so, I mean, yeah, I mean, you can do that. It kind of hurts you some nights when you're 3 and 4 man bench and, you know, it's like you put yourself in a tough spot sometimes. So you try to handle those things behind closed doors. And, you know, there's times when you have to make an example and you have to do things, you know, but you're kind of trying to think of the whole there as well.
All right, so the Yankee organization, let's be honest, doesn't like the Astros, doesn't like the Red Sox. So what would be more painful, seeing the Red Sox or the Astros in the World Series for you?
I don't know. It's painful not being there. It's painful not still playing. You know, I watch these games. I pay attention to what's going on, and, you know, it you know, it's a little bit torturous watching these games. But at the same time, I think it's important to watch these games. So as far as who, I don't know. Whatever.
That is angst we just heard.
Does it get, like, top billing in your house this week? Or, like, tonight we throw on the Knicks game? Like, do you sit there and watch it beginning to end? How do you consume the baseball?
Well, it depends. You know, I got to pick up some kids at football practice and soccer practice and things like that, you know, around, you know, what's for dinner and things like that. So it's on. At some point, do we go down where we have a couple TVs going, where we have a, you know, basketball game on with the baseball game? You know, when football Thursday and weekend gets here, you know, we have football games on with the baseball game, you know. So it just depends. You know, we got 4 kids and we're busy, so you don't always get to choose exactly how you absorb all the sports you want to.
You realize Jalen Hurts is not the quarterback moving forward, right?
What do you mean moving forward?
For the Eagles, he's not the guy. I just don't think he's the guy. Do you think he is?
I think he's gonna have a nice career.
Okay,
but yeah, I'm maybe with you.
Anything else, guys? Do you have any? I know, well, Peter.
I want to throw this out because we do a lot of talking about the analytics, and we hear once you get to the playoffs, it's kind of a crapshoot. Can you be the same and make the same decisions in the regular season and then do it exactly the same in the postseason, or is it completely a different animal and you have to kind of throw away the numbers and start?
I wouldn't say completely different, but it's definitely different. I mean, you know, I think the biggest challenge and the biggest thing during the regular season, especially when it comes to, you know, pitching, is you'd like, you know, the pitching you want in the regular season, especially, hopefully the starting staff carries you. And that's where, you know, where the offense becomes really important too, to where you have those games where you score a big number and a pitcher's pitching really well, and now he can go 6-7 innings where you're not turning it over to your guys at the back end of the bullpen. Obviously, you need to be probably on the whole a little more aggressive, in the postseason. So they are different because in the regular season, you're managing for the long haul a little bit. You're partially managing for the long haul in that, you know, you're considering, you know, you got a game every day. So you're like, you know, when do I get this guy out? But this guy going another inning or two really sets you up the rest of the week a little bit better. Whereas obviously more so in the playoffs, it's obviously a little bit more so of today's a little bit bigger.
All right. Yes. Yesterday in the Zoom, you very rarely get visibly chapped, but you were chapped. You don't like when it's intimated, even more than
chapped in the Zoom yesterday.
No. Well, when you said about the boogeyman that people say that you're just a puppet for the front office, that you don't like that. So I want to compare what Dave Roberts said. Dave Roberts started Corey Knebel in the first game of the NLCS, and he was asked why. He said, "Well, that came from the tippy top of the organization. We all have a vote." And somebody said, "Well, do you have more of a vote?" He goes, "No, I just have one, and if I'm outvoted, I have to start Corey Knebel." Is that how the Yankees are?
No, and I've never been dictated to like that. You know, ultimately, the lineup, who we start in game decisions are mine. Now, different people have influence on that and certainly talk strategy and talk plans and talk things, but it's people put in their input, and then ultimately it's on me to decide how I want to, which direction I want to go, because you do have, you know, disagreement or, you know, different opinions about which way we should go, whether we're setting up a rotation, say for a couple week stretch we're going through, or, you know, whether we're doing a lineup. You know, if I want to get input from anyone, I take that input. And then ultimately it's on me to make that call.
Would you, in a perfect world, would you rather not have so much information and just manage like Billy Martin and Earl Weaver did?
Well, I think you mean take it away from everyone or just
I mean, the front office is not involved at all, other than, you know, they get you your players. They're not sending down, you know, optimum lineups, which you could change, but it's just you. You're the last.
No, because I value that information, so I want all the information that help me make a better, a more informed, you know, decision. So I'd want that information.
But do you ever go against the numbers and go, "No, I know this guy had a fight with his girlfriend. The numbers say hit him, but I'm not hitting him."
So much more than anyone would imagine. Sure.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
And you're not called up and say, "Why'd you go against the numbers?"
Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. We have those discussions, and yeah.
Well, that sounds like it's tough. I mean,
It's not. We're it's a healthy environment. It's, you know, people that are really invested, that are really good at what they do, that really, you know, we have, I feel like, a healthy environment in that way. And, you know, doesn't mean you don't argue about things, or doesn't mean you disagree or agree, whatever. That's part of it. You know, I think that's part of any healthy company, is that you can get in and disagree and agree and try and make better decisions because of it.
Aaron, we congratulate you on the 3-year deal with the option. We thank you for coming on, and hope you enjoy your offseason. Hopefully we can talk again.
Yeah, look forward to seeing you at some point, Michael.
That
don't
be
a stranger.
Nice. Okay. Thank you, Aaron.
Hey,
be well.
And you guys too. Yep, take
care.
Yeah,
sure.
Thank you.
A little too little, too late. He doesn't care about seeing us, Don.
No, I understand that.
I think he likes you, Peter.
I think he likes Don too. I'm sure. I'm just saying. I want to be whatever. If you get an invite to the house, Michael, I'd like to go.
No, I'm not going to ask him if you could go. I mean, it's got to be included in the invite. I'm not going to say, "Gee, can I bring Peter?" I'd say, "Gee, can I bring Jody?"
I guess you're right. It wouldn't make sense for me to be your plus one to a dinner invite at his house. If he like invited you for dinner, thinking you're bringing your wife, and you showed up with your co-host, that would be strange.
It would be odd. It would pose a lot of questions. All right. So Andrew's screaming at me. We blew through commercial breaks, but I just felt that talking to Aaron Boone was a little bit more important.
Had to happen.
Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you. We'll hear from you, your phone calls, and what you just heard right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. The ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.